But how many more social networks can the market handle? And will startups like Global Grind be able to survive? On the other hand, could job hunters find out that online social networks are their new best friends? Our technology contributor Mario Armstrong is going to fill us in on that and give us a look at how an Obama administration is poised to give tech a new role in government. Hey, Mario.
Hey, Farai, how are you?
I'm doing great. Great to have you on again. So you just heard Russell Simmons talking about Global Grind. But, you know, the reality is it is a tough market out there. And I keep hearing about how venture capital, which is the money that startups get, is drying up. What kind of challenges would a company like this face?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. And the companies that are in this type of space, part of their revenue generation is delivered by advertising. I mean, a huge chunk of this whole idea of creating a social network and a community is to have eyeballs that are interested in content, and having those eyeballs and being able to segment those markets of those eyeballs to advertisers is of value. But you have to have, A, the traffic, and then, B, you have to have the advertisers that are willing to spend money on those particular demographics. So right now we're seeing a retrenching, although I do think that more advertisers should be spending more money online right now, and unfortunately maybe pulling from traditional media, because you can track your online advertising much better than you can your a general traditional buckshot type of campaigns.
You talk a lot to us about the opportunities that are out there for entrepreneurs of color. And of course, Russell Simmons has been someone who's been able to do a little bit of everything. He started out in the
music industry.
Yep. He's done, you know, he's got for-profit, non-profit, jewelry, you know, clothing.
Credit card.
Yeah, just pretty much everything.
But
overall, is this space open to entrepreneurs of color? This space meaning online social networking? Is there still room for new innovation?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, and it absolutely is. I mean, if anything, what we've seen now and what I've been preaching is that we need to start being more niche. More niche-focused is actually the better. So we come from a long way of having these broad sites that would just aggregate a whole bunch of people and just be this commercialized area, to now seeing real value in having super niche sites. It's kind of this whole thing that goes back to this idea of the long tail, having fewer people that may be really passionate about a certain thing than having a lot of people that may not really ultimately be interested. So my point is, content coming from specific minority audiences, I believe there's absolute opportunity for specific niche content. I do think you need to drive down your niche, though. So it can't just be, like in the case of Global Grind, they clearly stated hip-hop was their jumping-off point. So they weren't trying to be the next BlackPlanet.com and just be everything to everybody. They were focusing on the hip-hop audience and how to serve that particular audience. That's the type of niche and type of focus that I think can succeed and will succeed. I think Russell Simmons also said something that was really interesting. He said they want to frame the discussion, but they don't really want to develop the content for it. They're kind of like curators. And I think there is a business model for that. On the other hand, I think there's true value in creating your own content. So what I like to see them do, and I would imagine that they probably have plans for this. I haven't had a chance to sit down with Navarro and talk at length about this, but I would imagine they want to do both, a hybrid, maybe at some point creating some of their own exclusive content that can't be found elsewhere while they're still aggregating from other sites.
What about job hunting and online social networking? And let me give you a couple scenarios, and I know that you know about all the different possibilities. One is, all of a sudden you get laid off and you start searching your social network, you find someone who's hiring. That's the good one.
Right.
And then the other one is so you get laid off, you're looking around, and all of a sudden your potential employer says, well, actually, I found those pictures of you wearing booty shorts on your Facebook page, and I just don't think that's appropriate for our company. You know, what's the upside and downside of how you can use social networking?
Make sure you got the right booty shorts on.
Or it depends on the job you're applying for, I guess.
I guess it does. No, I think you're bringing up something that's happening not only in employment sector, but also for college admissions, all types of things. So it's finding itself trickling down into other areas. So the bottom line, first and foremost, remember that the internet is a public space. All right, anything that you put up there can ultimately, I don't care if you're password protected or not, ultimately that could be copied, found, and reposted somewhere else. So first and foremost, make sure that your content that you're revealing of yourself is something that you know, you're comfortable with showing to a possible employer or a college admissions officer. Secondly, use it to your advantage. Use these things like LinkedIn. You create your own blog site. Make sure that some of the discussion that is out there about you, you're controlling that. Make sure you have your own presence online. So talk about some of the extracurricular activities, your hobbies, your interests, things that you've done really, really well or you're very proud about, and take advantage of some of that. I think that's something to really take consideration of, because this is a time where people are actually looking at these online sources, and you have to separate between your social life and your business life and be able to understand how to do that in this online world.
Do you think that what kind of jobs is online social networking useful for, and what kind of jobs is it less useful for? Because, you know, some jobs are ones where you really can apply by email across the country, and other ones are much more sort of face-to-face interview, for example. So when is it really an advantage to be in this space when it comes to really seeking jobs and opportunity?
Are you talking about seeking jobs in general or seeking jobs specifically in the social media space?
No, seeking jobs in general. I mean, okay. What kind of jobs are the kinds of jobs that you can benefit from, you know, being online for? Because, you know, some of them, for example, if you want to go work for a local convenience store, you might just want to walk up to the convenience store instead of trying to post on Facebook. But what kind of opportunities really do come up more online?
I mean, those that really benefit off of you being able to have that type of internet connection, number one. So things that you can create your own content, things that are web-based types of job opportunities where you don't actually have to be in a physical location, but you need to be able to work online, or that's how you're going to get your work done is online. So there are a variety of different things. I even think to some degree, though, when you're thinking about even traditional jobs that are in bricks and mortar places, you still have to go online in large degree to apply for some of these places. Some of them don't even have applications on paper anymore. They just aren't printing that stuff. It's a waste of money. So I still think that when you're doing your job searching, you need to use tools like LinkedIn. If you're not using things like LinkedIn, you should really get to understand how that works. And what it does is it cuts down the degrees of separation. Because ultimately, folks, what you want to do is when you're trying to find a job, you really want to use your power of your network. That's really what you're trying to do. Who do you know that knows someone that may be hiring at somewhere else? And how can you use that power of that one-to-one connection to get you a leg up or an advantage to get you in front of the decision makers so that you can interview for that job? So use sites like LinkedIn and social networking sites to let your voice be heard and understand exactly what you're trying to accomplish and try to cut down that 6 degrees of separation.
Speaking of 6 degrees, change.gov. It is the official site of the incoming decider. It's tell us about the job application process there to try to get into the Obama administration.
Yeah, this is pretty wild, right? Because I never really knew how to apply for a job for the White House, but now I kind of
can do chance.
That. Yeah, so I'm curious to just throw, even though I'm really not interested, I'm curious to kind of like submit my resume just to see what would happen. I think I'm going to do that just to see what type of response I get either way. But on change.gov, which is this new website, it's kind of a website that's built for the transition of President-elect Obama. So this is a website that you can go to and find out all the news that they're talking about releasing, everything from who's on the transition team to actually applying for a job. So you can actually go to their job section and look for opportunities with the Office of Personnel Management using their website. Now, they say that these are for non-career positions, whether in the White House or in any federal department, agency, or commission. So this is interesting. I mean, you just fill out the form below. And, right on this website, I'm looking at it right now, and submit if you think you should be working for Obama and Biden.
It looks like, and other folks on NPR have spoken about this as well, there's so many questions. Basically, you have to have apparently lived the life of a saint in order to be able to pass some of these litmus tests. I mean, is that really true, or does it just seem that way? Because they really ask you, basically, have you ever jaywalked? Have you ever, that of course, not literally, but kind of.
Right. Right, right. Well, I mean, the point is this. Look, why waste time? I mean, they're going to do what they need to do to process applications the way the federal government would do anyway. But so why waste the time? The point is, be transparent. I think what they're also trying to say here is send a message. Be transparent with us, because we're going to find out one way or the other. We're going to look at – if we really seriously are looking at considering hiring somebody, we're going to look at their online footprint. And I do think that they actually do mean that. They are going to look at that online footprint.
I'm sure they will.
Where do you have profiles? Yeah. I mean, any other employer in their right mind would do the same thing. Now, they may have other motives for doing that as well. You know, what are they saying? What are they writing about? I don't know. But the point is, they could be looking at that online footprint. But, you know, we've never seen this done before. The other thing that's really interesting about change.gov is they've been asking for people to send in their ideas for policy, whether that's in text or actually submitting a video. So I'm still trying to work through exactly how they plan to aggregate that and how they plan to utilize that. But it's certainly starting to show steps of something that's different that hasn't been done before.
Well, speaking of, you know, what's going to be done, there's also the question of policy. And you had Eric Schmidt of Google, just one of the many high-profile policy advisors. Obama has promised to name a chief technology officer. That's never been done before.
That's right.
What would this person do?
Yeah, this is a major, you know, I never knew, right? It's like, wait, we didn't have a technology officer in the White House before? And so, no. So this person's responsibilities is going to be a couple things. Number one, they are going to look at private industry software solutions that they should be importing into government. So in other words, instead of them trying to create or trying to find stuff that's maybe off the shelf, they might find some things that are off the shelf, but they really want to import the best of breed software applications that are out there to help them manage and run government better. So that's one. Number two, more centralization between the other agencies. So all of these agencies have a chief information officer or a head technology person. Well, how is that all being communicated and managed from the White House and understood? How can they make sure they take advantage of cost reductions, total cost of ownership when it comes to technologies? So that's the second area. And I think the third area is to lend more transparency. He's talked about it. He's ran a campaign pretty much on trying to be transparent in terms of connecting to people. It's going to be interesting if they can continue that type of momentum in terms of actually running government and using technology to be more transparent. Now, in his experience, to Obama's point, to his credibility in the background, he did do back in the day when he was a senator of Chicago, a Google-like database for contracts in Chicago. So that was like a transparent way for people to see exactly who was getting contracts from vendors and who was applying and making that transparent. So we'll see if that goes on a larger scale.
All right. Just quick hit. If you had one thing that you wanted the administration to accomplish with technology in its first term, if there's more than one, but you know, what's your one fantasy? Quickly.
Oh my gosh! For Rye One, you're putting me on the spot.
Yeah.
I would have to probably say STEM education: science, technology, engineering, and math education. If they could funnel more money into our teachers and into our kids becoming the future engineers and scientists, then the innovation will take care of itself.
All right, Mario. Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Farai.
Mario Armstrong is News & Notes' regular technology contributor, and he joined us from the studios of the Baltimore Sun. And that's News & Notes. Nicole Childers and Jeffrey Bennett produced the show. Sasha Woodruff and Zachary Slobig edit. And Ki-Ming Sun is our director. Our technical director is Shireen Straussberg. Marcia Caldwell is our drive engineer. Our staff includes Tony Cox, Roy Hurst, Jeffrey Gardner, Drew Tewksbury, and Sonata Lee Narsis. To listen to the show or subscribe to our podcast, visit our website, nprnewsandnotes.org. To join the conversation or sign up for our newsletter, visit our blog, nprnewsandviews.org. News & Notes was created by NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium. Next week marks the 30th anniversary of the Jonestown Massacre. We'll hear memories from some survivors. I'm Farai Chidea. This is News & Notes.